Good evening. This is Mae Russell in KAZU, Pacific Grove, California. Now we transfer from bilingual education and language to a subject that requires 10 languages to understand. I don't know what you call that. This is broadcast number 566, and it is October the 11th, 1982. I have an article coming out in the Examiner this next week. I believe it's under the author that I did it with by telephone and tape is Cliff Weindecker. We did a story, was Grace Kelly in danger in the Vatican? Was she a bag woman for the CIA or privy to secrets inside the Vatican that caused her to be killed? That was the gist of the story. I don't know how Cliff will reword it. There's the Globe, the Examiner, the National Enquirer, and the Star. The Globe and the Examiner are owned by the same people. So if you look for that, they go quickly. They're on the stand 1 week, and then that's it. So those of you that can get the article, it will be out this week. I did mention that these programs are taped and transcribed. They go out by subscription to other people, but I want to ask a favor, please. Many people duplicate the tapes. That's fine. If you duplicate them for people, you can even sell them and make a business. You can give them away. There's no copyright. Please copy the bibliography and the sources of information that goes with the broadcast. That makes it more credible. And finally, if you have any question about the spelling, because these broadcasts are transcribed and taped, they're typed up rather, please, if you have a question of a name, telephone me. My telephone is on the top of the sheet that goes out with the cassettes. I'm listed in the book. Write me a letter, but don't copy them or type them up without having the names correct, because if we get the names wrong, then no matter who reads the transcript of it, it doesn't make sense. They can pick up a book and be reading about a different party and not know it's the person that I referred to. For example, some of the foreign names are difficult and my pronunciation isn't the best. Mr. Tisserant, Eugene Cardinal Tisserant, who worked in the Vatican and was involved with scandals with Paul Marcinkus, is not Mr. Tesserant, T-E-S-E-R-A-N. And Bettino Craxi, the man who works with Licio Gelli in Italy, when it is spelled K-R-A-K-S-Y, it makes me look ridiculous and silly. And I've gone to all this work and done all this research to get this information out, so it is of utmost importance that the dates and the names be spelled correctly. That is, otherwise, there's no use to even send the messages out because they don't even look like the same people. The same way for Ferenc Nagy. I know that's a hard one, F-E-R-E-N-C-N-A-G-Y, but it doesn't come out Frank Nage, N-A-G-E. They sound like different people, and they read differently, and they sound like Americans and not like Hungarians or Italians, and it's very important to have them absolutely precise, because if they're not precise, there's no point in writing them up because you can't connect them to the events or future events or anything in the past. So if there's any question, send me your manuscript. If you're writing a paper, a college paper, if you're writing an article or for a news service, send me the manuscript or call me. I will correct the names and then it goes out properly. Otherwise, it has absolutely no value, and it is a detriment because it makes me look ridiculous that I don't even know who these people are and get their names all wrong after all that work. Now, this week I am going to briefly touch on Grace Kelly. I'm not going into the Vatican connections like I did before, but the second half of this broadcast I will be doing Grace Kelly, 20th Century Fox, and her role as a businesswoman and on the board of Fox. And in Monaco, the woman of the world, other than just the mother role, the image of the saint with the halo that is projected so much. First, I want to say that President Reagan doesn't take any of my advice at all, for sure. I mentioned October the 4th last week that if Nancy and Ronald wanted to declare war on the dope dealers, they should get rid of Senator Paul Exalt from Nevada, which is the heart of the organized crime skimming money syndicate. Lexalt was the fundraiser for Ronald Reagan when he was president. I said that last Monday, and then the Chicago Tribune had an article, Just one day later, Nevada's Lex Salt is eyed as the chief fundraiser for the entire Republican Party. So the mob and the mob state will be collecting the money to run the candidates. They're promoting him. The GOP chief, Mr. Richard Richards, resigned. He doesn't like what they're doing and the way they're doing it. So now they're suggesting Paul Lex Salt. You know, the problem is if you catch these names way back, you wouldn't be in the trouble we're in today, just as if the investigations of John Connally and Richard Kleindienst and Paul Marcinkus forging and counterfeiting stocks equal to $1 billion in 1972 wouldn't compound the financial crises today if those guys had been locked up and put in some striped suits behind bars. But because they cover up these things, it compounds, and 10 years later, it's much worse. It is literally a cancer on the economic system. So now the governor of, former governor of Nevada, the senator from Nevada, the man who knew Howard Hughes wasn't in Nevada, and I want to do the Hughes-Nevada connections very shortly and compare it next week to taking his fortune of that he got when he sold TWA and buying up the hotels and the gaming tables in Vegas, to having Grace Kelly die and then the mob coming in from Italy and France and taking over the tables in Monaco. Through kidnapping or killing these particular people, Monaco becomes a second Las Vegas, and this is what's going to happen now that it was bad enough when she was alive, but now it's ripe for the kind of takeover that was done when Howard Hughes was never seen again after Boston, and Paul Lex Salt knew when he was a governor of Las Vegas that he wasn't there. So that this man that allowed that entire charade with the assassination teams and the Nazification of America under the Hughes umbrella, he is going to be the fundraiser for the GOP. Anything that comes down, I think people really deserve it. I get so disgusted at the way these people move up in power when they should have been removed a long, long time ago. Now, I have to continue every week with my update on Fritz Kramer, my running account of Fritz Kramer. And precisely, I want to read a letter I wrote to the members in Congress, the Subcommittee on Immigration, Refugees, and International Law. A subscriber to World Watchers sent me the names of the members of that committee. And if you write to me with a self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll give you their names, because there's seven of them, and you wouldn't remember them if I ran them down on the air so fast. They're having hearings on the illegal allowing of Nazi criminals into the United States after World War II, done by Richard Nixon and Nelson Rockefeller and Mr. Wiesner of the CIA, who conveniently commits suicide at one point, not a while back. But the committee in the Congress is supposed to look into the matter, and I wrote a letter, seven letters today, and this is what I have enclosed, and the letter is self-explanatory for those of you that don't keep up with my Kramer versus Kramer every week. Dear, and then the members of the Congress that I addressed to the individuals. Enclosed is a picture of Nazi war criminal Fritz Kramer, prisoner number 33 at the Dachau trials in December 1964. And I gave each of them a picture of Fritz Kramer with number 33 hanging over his chest, his breastplate. Secondly, enclosed is the front page magazine section from the Washington Post, March 2nd, 1975, about F.G. Fritz Kramer, who was the man who was the plans officer for the chief of staff of the United States Army. So they have a picture of a Fritz Kramer, Hitler's Kramer, in the seat, and R. Kramer, who runs a Pentagon here. Third, the Fritz Kramer who became the plan officer for the chief of staff of U.S. Army, and I gave his serial numbers, both of them, served overseas in 1944 to 1945 in Scotland, England, France, Belgium, Holland, and Germany. Four, I request that your committee investigating Nazis entering the United States after World War II, illegally entering, interview Fritz Gustav Anton Kramer and find out if they are the same person, Hitler's Kramer and our chief of staff at the Pentagon. Three, if they are not the same person, and if this Kramer says he is not, therefore they don't have to see him, how is it that Adolf Hitler's Fritz Kramer is not in a single history book of World War II after the 1964 trials. The Dachau Malmedy trials are in very few books. The Dachau trials are mentioned in one out of every 3,000 books on the history of Germany and Nazism. If this is not the same Kramer, where did the other Fritz Kramer, Hitler's, go after his number 33 sign came off at Dachau? Please locate the source information on the other one. The United States Fritz Kramer refuses to be photographed, even though he made the most important military decisions and appointments since World War II. 1. Are these the same man? 2. If they are not, why is the United States Kramer hiding? 3. If they are not, where did the other one go? And 4. If they are the same, he entered the country illegally because he was a war criminal. Get him out. Sincerely, May Brussel. Now, a friend who listens to these broadcasts, a world watcher, has been trying to obtain information on Hitler's Kramer after the Dachau trials, and he went to the library system to know Mobach, and this is the answer he got on that matter. Sorry to report that I have not been able to find any biographical or current information on Fritz Kramer other than what you have already found. References of his importance in the Battle of the Bulge, Hitler's right-hand man, Hitler depended on him, and his entering and orchestrating with Mr. Dietrich and Piper the Battle of the Bulge and the Malmedy massacres. The Mobach said, the massacre at Malmedy has not been on the bookshelf of the library for the last 2 months. It's written by Charles Whiting. It hasn't been on 2 months, so we can assume it is missing. The only information I can find that might be helpful is a page from a book, Uncertain Judgment, a Bibliography of War Crime Trials by John Lewis. It has more sources of information. The items checked, I looked at, they do not have anything about Fritz Kramer among the war criminals. One of them, the Senate hearing on the U.S. Army mistreatment of the German defendants, did have some testimony of Kramer at the time that he had heard of mistreatment but was not mistreated himself. The hearing was held in Munich in 1949. It is possible that Kramer got out before 1956. I know he got out. I want to know if he was in the Pentagon in 1948. I have checked all that we have on current and old German biographical directories. This is the entire library system for California, MOBAC. Okay, maybe it's national, but this is in California. They put it through the computers. We have checked the old German biographical directories and books on the Third Reich that include biographical material with no luck. If the patron wants to do more serious research, they should use the Hoover Institute for War and Peace at Stanford, but I have my doubts about finding information on the current whereabouts of Fritz Kramer. We'll close now, and there is no way for the Mobach to find a man whose picture I have at the Dachau trials, who was there but disappears completely, yet our American Kramer is not visible. Now, another person who is a world watcher that subscribes to these tapes and has been assisting me tremendously in Minneapolis sent me an article of a reunion in Minneapolis last week titled Former Enemies Find Common Memories of the GI German Reunion. Now, this is about the boys from Company G meeting at the Sheraton Ritz Hotel in Minneapolis, from World War II veterans from the United States Army 70th Infantry Division, and how these people met with Germans, and they quote one Eric Meyer from West Germany. The Germans that come to the reunion, these are men who fought in the Battle of the Bulge at Malmedy, Americans, and they meet with Germans from the 6th SS Mountain Division. Now, that was Mr. Piper's division, and worked directly with Adolf Hitler and Otto Skorzeny's division, and of course all of them worked with the Republican Party and the CIA and Reinhard Gehlen and Alan Dulles after the war. And this article goes into the fact how they are friends now. We have reunions. They met back in Germany, the 70th Division. The Americans greet me with open hearts, the Germans said. The 70th Division has been holding reunions for 10 years and invites veterans from the 6th SS Division. Now, that's the Fritz Kramer Adolf Hitler, Himmler special, Otto Skorzeny, the group that were going to take the world for the Fourth Reich and make the Reich live forever. Now, the catch about this reunion, they say they don't have anything against each other. They like each other. The more you see these guys, the Germans, the more you realize they're just GIs and we're GIs. And attention was called by the person who sent me this article that there was no 70th Division in Malmedy at the trial. I got out my books on the history of the Battle of the Bulge. There is no 70th Division. In the book, The Damned Engineers, it lists the U.S. Army infantry divisions going from the 30th to the 82nd to the 84th. In another book, The Battle of the Bulge by John Pimlet, there are various divisions, the 1st, 2nd, 4th, 26th, 30th to the 75th. There is none. And then I got out the 700-page book of the Army history, the official history of the U.S. Army that mentions Fritz Kramer, Hitler's Kramer as chief of staff of this bulge operation one time, just one sentence. And these are 10 volumes of World War II, and 700 pages are on the Battle of the Bulge. And in that index of the infantry divisions, there is the 35th, the 66th, and the 75th. There is, in no official literature, a history of the 70th. So what we're having here is a meeting of the top SS Panzer divisions of the echelon who are described in books like The Nazis Go Underground, who want Hitler to win this war once and for all through World War III and sabotaging America, meeting with these various characters annually or twice annually now, who can exchange as spies against America. They love each other. They have nothing against each other. The more you're around these guys, the Germans, the more you realize they're just like us. They are new comrades. The 70th, which is non-existent, that may have been put together as an excuse to bring the 6th SS Panzer Division to the United States for these reunions every 2 years and go to Germany. They created their own group that is friendly with the other group. And at the time of that terrible battle, Otto Skorzeny was providing American uniforms and English-speaking Americans from out of the American Army who were actually Germans to sabotage and prolong the war so that Martin Bormann could get the money and the art and the gold and the jewels out of Europe in Red Cross trucks to get ready for World War III. And in case you're not familiar with the Battle of the Bulge, which turns out to me to be the turning point of American history, and it's described as such in several books, the United States Army lost 29,493 people from December 15th to January 28th. In 45 days, there were 29,493 dead, only 8,000 or more coffins, and 21,000 missing when the snow melted and so forth that were never accounted for. And the Germans had 12,652 dead. In 45 days, the Americans had 46,000 wounded, 29,000 plus dead. One of the most dangerous battles because the orders were kill everyone in sight, don't have any survivors. And now some 70th Division is meeting with Hitler's SS Panzer Division while Martin Bormann is very much alive, still funding these operations through IG Farben in South America. Now to get to IG Farben, I suppose I can't pass up the Tylenol story. Just a few moments. I didn't discuss it last week. And in essence, I think there was a story in the San Francisco Chronicle, and I'm not going to repeat all the news, getting to the Tylenol, and it isn't far from the other story. Fear of sabotage, Tylenol repercussions. This was October the 5th, 1982. Tylenol was described as one of the most successful consumer products ever made. It captured 37% of the market. The sabotage of a widely used product like Tylenol carries the risk of huge costs, loss of sales, damage of confidence. That is Johnson & Johnson. And the big competitor for the painkiller is IG Farben's Bayer Aspirin. There are many books on IG Farben you can get, but a good one that's available is Crime and Punishment, IG Farben by Joseph Borken, published by Macmillan in 1978. And Borken died just at the time this book came out. He had been fighting IG Farben all of his life, and on the eve of the book being published, he was dead. On page 5 of that book, he tells how in 1903, Farben made their plans with Bayer to open their factories in New York City, the pharmaceutical and the dye stuff. They created the first gas that was used by the German army out of the Bayer laboratories to be used against Russian troops. The Germans introduced poison gas made by IG Farben and Bayer that shook the military foundation of the Allied armies. And then, of course, during World War II, Zyklon B was made by Otto Ambrose, who is now working and has been for our energy department, and under Ronald Reagan is getting promoted with his cohorts like J. Peter Grace in cabinet positions. Now, in page 283 in the book, The Crime and Punishment of IG Farben, they express their desire to expand their business, at least double it in the next few years. And this book came out in 78. The United States, of course, is the major market for their aspirins and Bayer AG. They have plans for a $1 billion expansion in the United States within 5 to 10 years. Well, that was 1978, and this is only 1982, and their biggest competitor is literally bleeding. If Bayer caused your stomach to bleed, their competitor, Johnson & Johnson, is bleeding economically. The Bayer decided through their various subsidiaries that they would expand and double the American expansion program. Well, if you have a plan for $1 billion expansion, you certainly could put a little cyanide, which is a German weapon, into a few bottles of Tylenol and ruin your competitor. I mean, you don't even need your billion-dollar expansion. They did more aspirin in 1 week and to hurt their competitor. And as the Chronicle said, there's a fear of sabotage. The book on Farben says the three multinationals assure permanent prosperity for the original 450 Farben stockholders, their banks, and the shadowy shareholders of the Martin Bormann Organization in South America, who guard and vote with Herman Schmidt's trust fund through intermediaries at the annual meeting of Bayer Aspirin. So Martin Bormann votes. He has an interest. He's a shareholder. His organization is a shareholder. And why would they let Bayer Aspirin go down the drain? Now, the headlines you saw this week and on the news of hysteria, just a few of them, more than one killer, a new theory, clues fade, strychnine-laced tainted Tylenol in Oroville, California, poison bottles found in California, another death link to cyanide, extortion plots, 100 agents look for killer, FBI seeks a madman, a crazed man, another Lee Harvey Oswald type, you see, 100 searching for random murderers. Tylenol, then another headline, sells best of all pain relievers. Another article, the tragedy could end Tylenol's success. Another headline, psychologists offer the profile of the killer, an alienated loner seen most likely as Tylenol poisoner. I didn't have time this week. I wish I had time to take the headlines and stories of the swine flu and the Legionnaire's disease and just change the name and read them to you and say it's a Tylenol scare. It's the same pulp. It's the same script writers that covered the John Kennedy murder, the Robert Kennedy, the Martin Luther King. It's the same IG Farben and Martin Bormann down in Argentina and Uruguay and Paraguay and the whole Nazi network, the Mengele's gang. And again, if you don't check out Paul Axalt in 1966 when news goes to Vegas, if you don't check out Martin Bormann in South America, if you don't check out IG Farben, you got to pay your dues later. And this kind of industrial sabotage was noted by John Kennedy. If you get the New York Times article, April 28th, 1966, you can go to the library. It's on microfilm. They ran a series exposing the CIA. And the idea of this article, it says JFK was annoyed at the CIA. He was not only annoyed, he was furious that they were using chemical warfare and altering crops that Fidel Castro had that were going to the Soviet Union. August 22nd, 1962, there was chemical biological warfare injected into the sugar that these people would receive. The director of the CIA was John McCone, who lives out here at Pebble Beach. He was director when John Kennedy was murdered. He worked for Bechtel McCone. He went over to the security, atomic energy, and headed that. He became CIA director. As I said before, he brought in the Nazis like von Braun, Wernher von Braun, and Walter Dornberger. John McCone was the director of the CIA. This year he was knighted by the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, the Vatican secret society that I referred to over and over again. His CIA was poisoning the crops, and JFK was furious. And JFK said, and it's quoted in the New York Times, it would set a terrible precedent for chemical sabotage in the undeclared back alley struggle between the East and West. Now, if you can have a chemical sabotage in the back alley struggle between the East and West, you can have it between Bayer and Johnson & Johnson. You can wipe out any competitor anytime you want, because chemical biological sabotage is more important, in my mind, even than we worry about the atomic bombs. We talk about whole cities and people being wiped out. But individually, people are being poisoned in food. Crops are being ruined. We can have this horrendous fear of what we eat, what we touch. We can get competitors knocked out of the box. And when John Kennedy was complaining about this, was McCone fired? No, if McCone had been fired, he wouldn't be CIA director when Kennedy was murdered, and cover that up also. Kennedy fired Alan Dulles from the CIA because he didn't trust him. He said there's a hidden government behind his back, and the president said, and it's in this article too, he wanted to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the wind. Well, there's a difference between wanting it and doing it. He should have done it that day. You can do anything you want if you want to. You can declare war. You can end war. You can splinter the place up. He should have kicked McCone out when Castro's crops. It doesn't matter who it is, because if it's Castro tomorrow, it's your food today. And he objected, and the sugar was already doctored. And there was a high-level political decision that was taken to sabotage the Cuban economy. And the point of the article was that the president doesn't even know, and that there is the preeminent concern whether the CIA, despite its disclaimers to the contrary, does on occasion make policy. Yeah, it makes policy, and it makes poison. And it makes poison that people will just swallow when they have a headache. And today it's that. It was Kool-Aid with the same poison that was put, the cyanide, the Nazi poison that was put down in Jonestown. Tomorrow will be the waterworks of an entire city, like Los Angeles. It depends. 3 million people or so depend on one water system. So it's a problem that isn't going to go away. And because it wasn't handled properly, Kennedy could have gotten rid of those very people and the chemists that put the stuff into the sugar. He should have just stopped government contracts with him. I mean, he's going to die anyway. He didn't know it. But if you're going to die, die for something. He died for a lot of things. He was shot for a lot of reasons. But the point is, why allow the same CIA director to go on? If you have poison crops that are going to arrive somewhere else and a whole boatload is injected just with one little needle or whatever and the stuff goes bad, get rid of that person if you don't believe in it. You can't have an instrument or an organization like that and not believe in it and believe that it's not going to do to you what it does to those crops. So in that sense, if you don't take care, as I say, of Paul Axalt, if you don't take care of the poisoning of food, then whatever comes down later, if you don't take care of Fritz Kramer now, you're going to end up with Fritz Kramer's protege, Henry Kissinger, as the minister of propaganda. He's just been given a big job with ABC Broadcasting on the news, and he's on the board of directors of 20th Century Fox that we're going into in 1 minute, Henry Kissinger's role. And the CBS has just put up a huge multi-million dollar fund for 20th Century Fox with no interest paid, so that they get Henry Kissinger on CBS and they get Henry Kissinger on ABC. And the minister of propaganda, Fritz Kramer's protege, that Nazi rat, gets promoted to carry our news stories and influence the news media. So if you don't weed out these people, you get worse than weeds later, and it really is a tragedy. Now, we're going to take a 1 minute break here. I'm going to stop.